Why We Cook is brought to you tonight by TechServe, located on West 23rd Street. Good evening, and welcome to Why We Cook on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. I'm Erica Wides, chef instructor at the Institute of Culinary Education in New York, and we are broadcasting live tonight from behind Roberta's Pizzeria in Bushwick, Brooklyn. So if you are a fan of this show, you can listen to us anytime archived on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. All the shows are archived, and now you can podcast on iTunes also for free, any of the shows that have ever been on the network. So that's pretty great. You can take us with you wherever you go. And since we are live tonight, if you'd like to call in, if you have any questions, comments, it's the number is 718-497-2128. Okay, so tonight, I want to talk about a couple different things. For the past couple of years, the New York Times has been publishing an edition of their Sunday magazine, yearly, once a year, that's devoted to the state of food in the U.S. Last year, it was kind of about sustainability, where your food comes from, environmental issues related to that. This year, the cover story is about Jamie Oliver. There are some other great articles in there. There's one about an artisan baker. There's one about the pros and cons of vegetarianism by Jonathan Safran Foer, which is a good article. But this cover story on Jamie Oliver is about his new project that he's launching, his attempt to get an American town to eat better and get healthier. It's a town in rural West Virginia, and he's in for a really tough battle because it's a town that's in what has been deemed the unhealthiest county in the country. It's in a place in rural West Virginia where people used to be miners and manual laborers. There was a lot of industry there, and so calorie intake wasn't really a problem because people burned it all off in manual labor, but now nobody burns anything off. People, people used to eat their meals at home and cook more at home. And now in the era of inactivity and the abundance of food that we have in processed and fast food, the people in this town are just sort of the, canary in a coal mine as to what's happening in the rest of the country. So anyway, Jamie Oliver is heading to rural West Virginia to try to get this town on track. And he's trying to get into the schools and change what the schools eat and teach people about food and how to cook, sort of reteach people about cooking and about food and teach the kids and teach the parents. And good luck to him. I mean, Jamie Oliver, he has his quirks. Sometimes he's a little annoying, but I really respect what he's doing. I think it's a pretty massive undertaking. He's already done similar programs to this in England and has had pretty mixed, fairly good success with it. So I wish him luck here. He's a man on a mission, and a lot of these projects he funds out of his own pocket, which is great. So good luck to Jamie. I hope he can get his message across. So anyway, in honor of that and the New York Times food issue coming out this past Sunday, I thought what we would do is a little show on good foods gone bad. Foods that start their lives out very innocent, very well-intentioned, but then get hijacked by the food industry and turned into food that you should never eat, sort of Frankenfood. Now, I'm not talking about the obvious things, like Twinkies or Big Macs, which are, obviously the garbage out there, or high fructose corn syrup or trans fats. It's not really about ingredients either. What this is food that starts its life out as just food, but then the chemical companies, the agribusiness companies get their paws on it and they turn it into something really bad. But then we'll talk about what you can eat instead, too, that's really good. So it's not all doom and gloom tonight. Okay, so the first one I want to talk about is popcorn, and specifically microwave popcorn, which I think is a really intrinsically evil product. People have been drying and roasting and popping corn since they first domesticated corn thousands and thousands of years ago. And when I was a little kid, we always popped our corn either like in an electric popper on top of the stove, or sometimes we would do it in our fireplace. We didn't even have a microwave until I was well into high school. But, you know, I teach at a culinary school, and I have students who don't believe me when I tell them that there are other ways to pop corn other than in the microwave. They can't comprehend of the concept of the corn itself as a separate entity from the package that goes in the microwave. They think it's sort of this all one thing that, you know, grows or is made in one place. I'm serious. This has really happened. They don't believe me. They have no idea that it's possible to pop corn outside of the microwave. They're so kind of thoroughly of the convenience mindset that they've never had that experience, the fun of doing it on top of the stove or in the fireplace or any of those. So microwave popcorn is about as toxic a food as you can get yourself near. Real popcorn is one of the simplest, most innocuous foods that you can ingest. But the bags that are made for microwaving are lined with plastic and full of chemicals that leach out when they're heated. And there's a chemical in it called PFOA. I can't pronounce the chemical name, so we'll just call it that. That is part of a class of compounds that is linked to infertility in humans. And at UCLA, they just did a recent study. And in animal tests, these chemicals cause liver and pancreatic and testicular cancer. Nice. From your popcorn. And when you microwave those bags, the chemicals vaporize and then get into the popcorn and then you absorb them. They stay in your body for years and they accumulate there. They accumulate in your fatty tissue. And if you buy butter flavor microwave popcorn, so-called butter flavor, you want to know that the factory workers who make that chemical called diacetyl, which is what butter flavor is, and have been breathing it in for years and years, are becoming very sick and have all kinds of disease now because of that. So what's better than using a microwave popcorn? Well, I go to my local health food store here in Brooklyn Heights, and they sell bulk organic popcorn for about a dollar something a pound, and I buy it by the pound because I eat a ton of popcorn, and I put it in a glass jar, and when I want to pop it every night, just about, it's my one little thing, is almost every night, I use something called a Whirly Pop, which is this great stovetop popper. It's sort of like a pot with a crank, and it spins around inside, and you can pop it with like a teaspoon of oil. I like to use grapeseed oil, but sometimes I use olive oil because I like how that tastes. And I just pop away. You put it on top of the stove. It takes about 45 seconds, and you've made your popcorn without the chemicals. And then I like to grind up this sea salt and nori combination that I have into a powder and kind of dust it with that. Or some nights I'll put like smoked Spanish pimenton on it, or maybe a little garam masala. Or if I want something sweet, I'll put on cocoa powder, a little sugar. It's really good. You can kind of take popcorn a lot of different directions. And it's so much better and so much cheaper and so much better for you. And you can even pop other grains this way. You can pop things like amaranth and millet and wild rice. They don't quite puff up the same way, but you can pop them, which is pretty cool to do with kids. So that's, you know, that's a good alternative to that horrible microwave stuff. So we have to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about popcorn, and then we'll move on to the next good food gone bad.
Listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Today's program was brought to you by TechServe. www.techserve.com.
Welcome back to Why We Cook on heritageradionetwork.com. I'm Erica Wides, chef instructor at the Institute of Culinary Education. And if you like listening to Why We Cook, You can find us on Facebook. Why We Cook is on Facebook. And you can become a fan. Send me a message. I'd love to hear from you. You can also go to whywecook.com and check that out, too. Okay, so tonight's show is kind of about good food gone bad, when you take really simple, normal, regular food and you put it in the hands of the food industry, what they do to it. So the first thing I was talking about was microwave popcorn and how evil that basically is and how full of toxins and chemicals it is, and why not just go out and buy yourself good bulk organic popcorn and do it yourself. The other benefit to doing that is it's so good and so fresh when you make it right, and it's a whole grain, you know, and everybody says eat more whole grains. Well, popcorn's your whole grain right there, so you're getting plenty of fiber just from that, and it has almost no calories at all. The only calories really come from the oil that you use. And when I was a little kid, my mom used to make popcorn for us to take to the movies, which I was always horribly embarrassed and mortified by. But of course, the truth is you really, really do turn into your parents. And so, of course, now that's what I do, too, is I make the popcorn and I take it to the movies with me, because there is no way I'm going to pay $6 for a tub of that chemical-laden, trans-fat-popped garbage that they call popcorn at the movies, especially when I can get my organic popcorn for $1.29 a pound in bulk, and they're charging me $6 for that. Also, like a large tub of movie theater popcorn is like 1,000 calories, and that's a little too much for me. If you do it at home, you're looking at like 200 for 8 cups of home popped popcorn. So I'd rather save those calories for something like really good cheese, or maybe like the 2 glasses of wine I'm going to drink with the popcorn at night. I'd rather do that. Okay, so we have to move on. The second one I want to talk about is canned tomatoes. So yet again, a good food gone bad in the hands of industry. So here's a little scary food industry tidbit that you might enjoy. Canned tomatoes, obviously, sold in cans, okay? Those cans are made of steel, or in the case of soda, they're usually, it's aluminum, but, I mean, canned tomatoes aren't soda, but, you know, canned foods, generally, the food is steel cans, sodas, and aluminum cans. And since tomatoes and soda are acidic foods, the cans that they're put in have to be lined to prevent the acid from corroding the can. So the cans are lined with a plastic film. Many years ago, the cans were made from tin, like, you know, tin cans, but the tin had to be soldered with lead, and the acid in the food would leach the lead out into the food and cause lead poisoning. So technology changed. Cans were made of steel, made of aluminum. That was great, but they had to prevent corrosion. So they started lining the can with a chemical called BPA. And it turns out that the BPA is just as bad as the lead, because it's toxic too. You may have heard about BPA recently because it's in those polycarbonate water bottles. You shouldn't be drinking bottled water anyway, but they're full of it. BPA is used to line the interior of almost all canned food, soda, and baby formula too. So that's nice. Start them off early with that. Well, most people are exposed to BPA from eating canned food and drinking soda, and they're getting more exposure than from drinking out of water bottles, because the acid dissolves the BPA so much more, and it leaches from the can liner into the food or the drink, especially something acidic, like I said, like tomato-based products or soda. So I was doing a little bit of research on this, and I looked on the NRDC website, National Resources Defense Council, which is a great website, and here's what they say. BPA is a hormone-disrupting chemical that has been associated with reproductive abnormalities and hormonal changes. BPA exposure is particularly a concern for babies, young children, and pregnant women. Pregnant women may want to cut back on canned food and canned soda, and parents should avoid infant formula in cans. The FDA and the federal government haven't implemented any protective regulatory framework for hormone-disrupting chemicals such as BPA, even though scientists have been concerned about potential health threats since the early 1990s. So limit your exposure to BPA, avoid canned foods, especially acidic foods. Look for canned tomatoes and canned soda. Canned tomatoes in cardboard, brick containers, or glass jars. And rather than buying canned vegetables, try frozen vegetables. So that's what the NRDC says. Now, first of all, who would eat canned vegetables? Does anyone still eat canned vegetables anywhere, except maybe like in prison? Why would you buy canned vegetables? But anyway, canned tomatoes and canned beans are a staple in my house. So I have to do some serious rethinking here. I can certainly switch to soaking and cooking my beans the slow way, which tastes much better. And I just did a show on beans a few weeks ago where I talked about how you all should do that. And I'm the big hypocrite eating the canned beans. So I got to switch to that. They also recommend switching to tomatoes in the cardboard Tetra Pak. It's like those juice boxes full of tomato, the Pommy brand. And those are good. I like to use those. But I always used to buy Muir Glen brand organic canned tomatoes, thinking I was doing the right thing. Turns out Muir Glen still has BPA in them. I called the company today. I called their 800 number. And they said, yep, cans still have BPA. Nope, no plans to change it. We don't know when we're changing it, but we'll pass it along that you're concerned to our marketing department. And it turns out that Muir Glen is owned by General Mills. So who knows how concerned they are with things like poison and the environment. So there's also a brand called Bionatura, which come in bottles that I've heard about. I've never seen them in the market. You could try those out. You could always cook and can your own tomatoes like in mason jars like, you know, grandmas used to do, but you know, who has time to do that? So I'm not sure. I guess I'm just going to switch to the Pommy because I don't want to keep eating the canned stuff. Although, of course, I just went to Costco and bought like 30 cans of organic diced tomatoes. So I don't know what to do now. I guess I'll just use them up. And I always thought that canned foods, you know, sort of lasted for an eternity. Like, you know, after the nuclear bomb fell and we were all living underground, we'd be okay because we could eat all our canned food. But it turns out that the longer you keep it, the worse it gets because the acid leaches out more chemicals. So I guess if you don't die from the atomic bomb, you're going to die from what's in your canned food. So whatever. Life's too short to worry about it. Okay, so no microwave popcorn, no canned anything. You ready for another one? As if you're not depressed enough already. Potatoes. Stop eating non-organic potatoes. If you buy potatoes, buy them organic. Turns out, conventionally grown potatoes are one of the most toxic, heavily sprayed and treated crops produced in America. So here's a quote from a guy named Jeffrey Moyer, who's the chair of the National Organic Standards Board. And he says, root vegetables absorb herbicides, pesticides, and fungicides that wind up in the soil. In the case of potatoes, the nation's most popular vegetable, they're treated with fungicides during the growing season, then sprayed with herbicides to kill off the vines before harvesting. And after they're dug up, the potatoes are treated yet again to prevent them from sprouting. And then he's quoted, I've talked with potato growers who say point blank they would never eat the potatoes they sell. They have separate plots where they grow potatoes for themselves without all the chemicals. Nice, right? The humble all-American potato, a little ball of masterful chemical engineering. But that one's simple. Buy organic, buy from your local farmer. The local farmer is a lot less likely to spray as heavily or treat them for long-term storage. And organic potatoes are only about $1 or $2 a pound, whereas conventional potatoes are half of that, but that's really not such a huge difference. So if you're going to buy potatoes, think about what you're buying. Okay, so we have to take a little break. And when we come back, we'll move on to a couple more topics, but we will also end on a positive, happy note.
Listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Today's program was brought to you by TechServe. www.techserve.com.
Welcome back to Why We Cook on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. You can listen to the show live every Tuesday night at 6:30. We broadcast live from here behind Roberta's Pizzeria in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Or you can listen to any show anytime archived on heritageradionetwork.com. And now you can also podcast on iTunes for free. So you could listen while you're working out or planting potatoes or whatever you do when you're podcasting. Okay, so tonight's show has been about when bad foods... No, that's not what it's about. When good foods go bad. When good, basic, simple food falls into the hands of agribusiness and the food industry and what they do to make it bad for us. So we talked in the first segment about microwave popcorn, taking something as simple and pure as popcorn and putting it in a bag with chemicals and sealing it up and turning it into like a little toxic bomb. We also talked about canned tomatoes, which start out their life as a lovely little tomato, perfectly good product, and wind up in cans that are lined with a plastic liner that begins to dissolve from the acidity of the tomatoes and leach out and get into your tomatoes and cause all kinds of reproductive problems and cancer and all that stuff. And then the last one I just talked about was the potato, which it turns out is the most heavily sprayed, most toxin-laden vegetable, so-called vegetable, out there. I don't think of potatoes really as a vegetable, but they are the most widely eaten vegetable in the U.S., which is why we're having all sorts of health problems, probably. But they're given a triple dose of chemicals, once when they're in the ground, once when they're harvested, and once when they're stored. So you should be buying organic potatoes if you can, or at least buy locally. Okay, so there are more on the list. There's this list that, you know, is all the worst things you can eat. But I'm not going to get to all of them tonight. I don't want to depress you too much. I want to end, you know, on a positive note. I'll do another show down the road on things like farmed salmon, grain and corn-fed beef, apples, conventional apples. I know. It's really, like, what are you going to eat? I'll get to them on another show. But if you want more info on those, you should go to the NRDC website because they have great information. So does the Organic Consumers Association. That's a really good one, too. You can check that one out. So that's it for the depressing stuff. Let's end on a good note. So if you've been listening throughout the summer, I was doing a lot of talking about vegetables and what's in season and how to cook them and how to prep them. And I've kind of gotten off the vegetable track for a little bit. And while I've been away from the vegetables, a lot more came into season. I think I kind of finished up with that end of summer eggplant, cucumber, tomato realm, did a little show on greens, but now we're heavily into the fall vegetables. And I just did some private teaching today where we made a lot of really great fall vegetable dishes. So let's talk about something good, like really great local vegetables and really great seasonal food. So let's check in. What's going on? What's in season right now? Well, the greens, like the hearty winter greens, are great, like Tuscan kale. We used that today, which is sometimes called cavolo nero. So nice, really dark, really flavorful. All the chards, the collards, the mustard greens, all the winter greens are really good right now. It's getting cold, and they're crisping up, and they're getting sweet. They're so good. Today, we braised the Tuscan kale with onions and garlic and then mixed it with whole wheat spaghetti and a little bit of parm and some lemon juice. It was so great, so simple, and so good. And we're getting into the winter squash season. Pumpkin season is upon us. It's almost Halloween. So some of the really cool-looking squashes are coming in, not just like the butternut and the acorn, which are great, but squashes like kabocha, which is a really nice squash from Japan. It sort of looks like green pumpkin, but on the inside it's bright red, and it has, I mean, bright orange, has great flavor. The Hubbard squash, the curry squash, which are those kind of big, bumpy, kind of bluish looking ones. They're gigantic. They're kind of too big for one person, but sometimes you can buy pieces of them. The delicata, which I love, which kind of looks like a pumped up zucchini, but it's yellow and kind of green stripey and hard, and it's hollow down the middle. And all you don't even have to peel it. You just slice it up and roast it. It's so good, and it cooks really quickly. The buttercup, which is so cute. It's a kind of like, almost looks like a Halloween gourd, but it's like a little kind of, how do I explain it? It sort of looks like a butternut squash that got stepped on and flattened. So all of those are in right now. If you go to your farmer's market or your local market, there's a lot of assortment. And, you know, you have to break out of that, like, acorn squash rut, if that's the only one you know how to use. Just buy another one. They all cook the same way. All you have to do with them is either split them down the middle and roast them like that on an oiled sheet pan, or peel and dice, toss them with some oil and some spices, and throw it in the oven. You can't really screw it up when you cook a squash, because if you accidentally overcook, all you do is puree it. And you meant to do it that way. And if you undercook, you'll know, and you just put it back in the oven. It's really kind of the most foolproof vegetable you can cook. You won't screw it up. And if you want to make soup, what's even better, like with a butternut squash, is just chop it up with the skin on and simmer it with some onions and stuff and some chicken stock and maybe some celery and some leeks, and then puree the whole thing, skin and all. I know nobody ever thinks of that, but you can leave that skin in there. It's just extra fiber. I learned that from Peter Burley, who's a really great vegetarian and flexitarian kind of chef. He said, oh yeah, just leave the skin on. And we're really now in the nice cruciferous vegetable season. Things like Brussels sprouts and kale, kohlrabi, and the turnips and the parsnips and cauliflower and all that stuff. So I think maybe next week will be the all about cruciferous vegetables show, because I love those. And I think they really fall into that category that I did a while ago, which is the vegetables that you think you hate, but you really shouldn't. There are ways to cook them that bring out the beauty in those vegetables and takes them from the kind of smelly, sulfurous, overcooked mush of maybe of your past into the realm of magical, transformative vegetable experience. So I think that'll be next week's show. We'll talk about the little cruciferous vegetables in that family. So get out there and get to the market, and don't get too stressed out about all the horrible stuff that I talked about. Just don't make microwave popcorn and start buying your tomatoes in Tetra Pak instead of in cans. It's all going to be okay. Get yourself some good vegetables. Go out, buy yourself some really nice cheese. Get a bottle of wine. Maybe find some grass-fed meat. Buy a grass-fed lamb chop, something like that. Order some meat from Heritage Foods and relax, because life is short and you should make every meal count. So that's it for Why We Cook this week. Remember that if you want to become a friend or a fan, you can find us on Facebook or at whywecook.com. And have a great week, and I'll talk to you next Tuesday.